Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour. Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Mitch Light from The Athletic is on the line with us. We talk a little college football with him. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic. We were talking earlier on the show. We're doing better than some of the teams.
It's a sports talk show. So
yeah, you need to do that, right? Makes the time go faster.
I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, Darren.
It does make the time go faster if you talk.
You know what? It's been a while since I talked to you guys. I had to come in with a comment right off the bat. But proceed.
I like it. Off the top rope.
Yeah.
What do you make of these lopsided games out of the gates? I mean, there hasn't been very many college football games, but what little sampling that we've got in the first 2 weeks, man, there's been some blowouts. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's been a decent amount of games, but there haven't been too many FBS versus FBS games yet. And at least locally, the one involving a team, MTSU Army, and then last night in primetime, the Navy BYU game. I thought, a lot was made of on the broadcast about how Navy didn't tackle at all. They had kind of a strange camp, and I'm sure that has something to do with it. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for your first contact to be, you haven't even scrimmaged, basically. But I thought from the first few plays that BYU just looked physically dominating. They controlled the line of scrimmage. So it might be, we try not to overreact under normal circumstances. These are not normal circumstances, but here I am overreacting. I thought BYU looked very good. Navy did not look very good, obviously. New quarterback, they've had a great run of really good quarterbacks. First start for him, so, they could still be a good team this year and more difficult to defend as the season progresses. But I was impressed with BYU. I think I was, Army has had a great run for about 7 or 8 years under Jeff Monken. 2 years ago, they kind of had a step back, but they were better last year. Just the worst nightmare for Middle Tennessee. Could not stop the option at all. Couldn't get anything going on offense. And I mean, I know it's 21-0 at that point, but the end of the half clock management fiasco was not a good look. So I don't know what there is to draw from that, Darren, because the sample size is so small. But I think we'd be naive if we're thinking it's something, if we can't just dismiss what these teams have gone through in preseason camp, the lack of consistency, the lack of continuity with practices and stuff. So, but it's, we're all excited football's back, but it's not fun to watch games like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what jumped out to me is Navy and MTSU. They've got two coaches in place that have been there for a good while, and they have a history of playing, good schools, and they can hold their own. They've had success, and just to see both of them just get pounded like that's what really jumped out to me, because they don't have a history of that under those two coaches.
Right, and Navy, you can see to some now that they've had more sustained success in Middle Tennessee, but Navy rarely, on occasion, they can look overmatched against some good Notre Dame teams. If they play really athletic teams that are disciplined on defensively, you'll see them slow down that option. You don't think of BYU being that. You don't think of them being a fast and athletic team, but I thought they were big and strong and physical, and they had enough speed on the outside to make them pay. But, yeah, you're right. If you're going to list a lot of the non-Power 5 coaches out there, programs out there that you kind of trusted to at least put forth a better effort in week one, I think Navy and MTSU would be on that list.
Yeah. How do you try to go about, doing what you do and trying to figure out, all those years at Athlon, you would put out, your rankings, and now you're at The Athletic. Everybody still does the same thing. You're still, right, you're trying to figure out who's going to be good. How do you go about that this season with so much uncertainty and just really not having a clue how it's truly going to play out?
You just speak with more authority and speak louder, so it sounds like you know what you're talking about. And you know what's going on, but and also
a lot of bold print.
Exactly, it's extremely difficult. How many times have you guys talked about what cliche do we want to use about this new normal, unique, all that stuff. We just haven't seen anything like this. And then let's just talk SEC football. There's so much unknown week to week, who's been practicing, how much continuity you have in the line of scrimmage. But then the schedule, there's no opportunity for teams with new quarterbacks or new coordinators. First of all, they missed spring practice. They can't ease into the schedule, gain some confidence. Like, how much does that matter? I don't know. Does opening up against an FCS opponent with your new quarterback and having him throw for 400 yards, does that help him gain confidence? Some would say yes. Some would say it doesn't matter. So I think this is just a year where we follow, we have fun, we're thankful there's some football. But if you think you really know what's going on, it's probably kidding yourself.
Magical year for LSU last year. And it was historical year, how good that team was. But they lost a lot of firepower to the next level. They've also had firepower opt out. They've been dealing with COVID cases. How do you think the follow-up to the magical season last year is going to look for LSU this year?
Yeah, I'm not as optimistic as some people are at LSU. I mean, they still have an outstanding base for talent, no doubt about it. They've always recruited well, I think. Four of the last five recruiting classes have been like in the top six or something like that. But I just don't think you can go with all of the losses they sustained and not skip a beat. And I know that's not your question. We all expect them to skip a beat, but do we expect them to go from number one in the country to number six or number 10 or 12? I think they're more of a top 10 team than a top five team. It's not, you know, it's the coaching staff too, losing Joe Brady. I know he wasn't the play caller, but he was kind of the mastermind behind that offense. They just lost so much there. And it's not like if they were in the SEC East, I could see them being more of a legitimate contender. I just think that the SEC West is – there's too many good teams. There's too many top 15 teams there. Like, I would slot them behind Texas A&M, maybe behind Auburn with some of the recent losses. So I think the – long-term trajectory of the program. I'm still buying stock in LSU. I think they kind of turned that corner mentally. I think there's all the buy-in with Ed O when there maybe wasn't a few years ago. But I just, there with all of the losses this year on both sides of the ball, I just don't see how they're a top-five team again.
Talking to Mitch Light, who is the college football editor for The Athletic. And, Mitch, you've got some really good writers on the scene there that have covered all the twists and turns we've been seeing in the last few months. Today, Lincoln Riley came out and said he is not going to disclose the COVID information. He's going to treat it almost like injuries, competitive advantage he's citing. It seems to be something that a lot of coaches are starting to move towards. Nicole Auerbach and Stuart Mandel, a couple of your colleagues, have been outspoken against this. You have a thought on what's the right thing to do? It seems complicated no matter how you do it.
Yeah, my initial thought when I saw that tweet was, yeah, not surprising. I mean, the fact that he's just admitting it's doing it for competitive advantage, at least he's being honest. You know, you can't hide behind HIPAA laws or saying, because, you know, you could figure it out if you went in and they said, we have five players out for COVID and there's five guys, you know, not suited up and they're not injured, and you could figure it out, I guess. So it doesn't really bother me that much. I think Oklahoma's actually been one of the schools that has been pretty transparent. They have released data. They released with them when they had to pause workouts a few months ago. So, you know, it doesn't. There's a lot of things to get worked up with. What's going on in college sports, college football? That one does not bother me.
Stuart Mandel has an article right now on The Athletic. My Hail Mary for the Big Ten, Pac-12, and a playoff compromise. This is something I guess we're going to watch going forward here. But as you watch what they do and you see all the reports, what is your thought right now on the chances that the Big 10 and Pac-12 eventually play somewhere down the line, whether that be around Thanksgiving time, a little bit before, a little bit after?
Well, I think they will play. I think, you know, we had a story. I work with our Washington writer, Christian Capel, and he had a story last week about the partnership with, I forgot the name of the company, but the partnership, the Pac-12, with the sort of the instant test, one of those labs that can, you know, get results in 15 minutes. And Larry Scott, which has been, he's been very outspoken and vocal about, hey, this is a game changer. This turns the corner for us. So I think the increased availability of those tests will make it much, much more likely that both of these conferences will play. You know, the coaches want to play. The There's been a lot of smoke. Coaches have been very savvy about leaking, talking to the right reporters to get information out there. What you have to pay attention to is the presidents, because they're the ones that make the decisions. But I think now there is enough smoke out there that at some point, my guess, I haven't followed it as closely as Stu and Nicole Auerbach, some of our reporters that, report on this all the time. My guess would be a early January start in trying those two leagues come up with some sort of format where they can play a pseudo Rose Bowl or a real Rose Bowl sometime in the early spring.
Wow. So not before that, though. Not that's around Thanksgiving time, which is what I think everybody is trying to push for, at least from the coach's end.
Yeah, really, the more I think about it, that makes a lot of sense, too, because a lot of schools have gone to a model where they've maybe started earlier, that they're not going to have students on campus. Most times you go up to Thanksgiving, you take either 3 or 4 days off or a week off, and then you come back for 3 weeks and then have finals. Well, most schools, I believe, are going to be remote there. So it's easier to keep the guys healthy and all that. So, that makes sense, too. And then the earlier you start, obviously, the less it disrupts your 2022 season. That's a whole other thing. We don't want these coaches in the schools, they don't want to do anything that would disrupt the 2022 season very much. So obviously the earlier you start a winter or spring season, the less chance of that happening.
Chase?
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. So I read through The Athletic's SEC season preview, which, those are always fun to do as we get ready for an all-SEC schedule. And one thing that kind of popped out at me was the blurb on Georgia and their offense, and not true comparisons to what we saw, the resurgence of LSU and how their offense woke up last year, but that Georgia, even though everybody seems to pick them to win the East, they still need a little bit more offensively. Do you think that we see that with the Georgia Bulldogs this year?
I think there's still some unknowns. That offensive line has been, they've been recruiting so well over the years. That has been such a strength. They lose two first-round picks, and then obviously Cade Mays transfers to Tennessee. What was the problem last year? It's a wide receiving core that was young. Young and talented, those guys don't always turn out to be a year older and productive. When you recruit like Georgia, you hope they will be, but there's no guarantees there. They're going to be good at running back. They still have, they don't have much experience there, but they've got five stars, after five star there. They lose some quarterback depth with Jamie Newman opting out. The USC transfer, JT Daniels, has not been cleared yet. They expect him to, but that's not a done deal that he'll be clear. So I think the Georgia defense will be really, really good, but I think those are legitimate concerns. It's not just a snap your fingers and Georgia's going to be great on offense this year. I think there are some issues.
I tend to learn more from looking at the sleeper teams and those teams that people think, all right, watch out for them because they're going to shock some people, more than I do from, hey, this is our order of finish. So if you had to answer the question of the sleeper team in the SEC, which team would it be for you, Mitch?
There's different tiers. I like Florida a lot, but I don't think that's considered a sleeper team. I like them to win the East. I like Ole Miss. I don't know how much I like them to, threaten the top of the West. I don't think they're going to win the West. I really like what they have in the backfield. They had trouble throwing the ball with consistency last year, but Lane Kiffin comes in, inherits, is their backfield better than Georgia or Alabama? Probably not. But, John Reese Plumlee is a kid who was not a great baseball player, not really that highly recruited for football. He beats out Matt Corral. He led the SEC in rushing last year. They've got five-star running back Jarian Ealy as a sophomore this year. They're really, really deep there. I think with Lane Kiffin's creativity, they're going to score a ton of points on offense. I don't know if they'll stop enough people, but I think Ole Miss is a team that can maybe exceed some expectations.
See, Ole Miss is a team that I kind of identified as they could spoil some things that, maybe not so much as a sleeper as they could win a game they're not supposed to and obviously mess some things up for some other teams. That's kind of how I viewed them, but it's interesting that you brought them up. What about Tennessee? What's your faith level in Tennessee?
Well, yeah, real quick, going back to Ole Miss, if you remember the Alabama game last year, they ran all over Alabama. You know, I think they had 250 yards rushing. That's the type of thing, not saying that no one's going to be ready for them, but it's almost like playing an option team. You think you've done all you can do to practice, and then you just can't simulate it. Well, with their running backs and Plumlee back there, sometimes you just can't simulate that in practice. So I could see that's a good point, too, that they might not have a great year, but they might pull off a big upset because they'll just gash a team on the ground. Tennessee, I think I kind of fall in line with what most people think. I would, you know, I don't see them threatening the Big Two of Florida and Georgia in the East, but I think, you know, after that, you know, you like South Carolina. I mean, they went 4-8 last year. They've yet to identify a quarterback. Kentucky's, a lot of people are jumping on the Kentucky bandwagon because that's a program that at least we've learned they've got staying power. It wasn't a one-hit wonder 2 years ago. But I think from an overall talent standpoint, it's easy to like Tennessee at number three, but, you know, we've been over this years in the past where their roster looked like it was the third best roster or the second best roster, and they've underachieved. But, you know, I think they turned a little bit of a corner last year. Now, they didn't really beat anyone good down the stretch, but they won some games in previous years they might not have won. I think they need to get better, more consistent quarterback play. That's no doubt about it, but I like. Obviously, there's a lot to like, Chase, with the offensive line. I think they're deep in the backfield. You know, we saw what Eric Gray did late in the year in the Vanderbilt game, and Chandler's back. So they've got good depth there. So I think Tennessee very well could finish third in the East.
Speaking of third, in this time in the West, a lot of people pick Texas A&M. And, okay, that makes sense with LSU, if LSU remains ahead of them, and then Alabama at the top. But I guess my question here is, third in the division, is that good enough for as much money as Jimbo Fisher is being paid?
It depends. You know, well, yes, it is, because they're not going to fire him. If, you know, he's got a $75 million guaranteed contract, but I understand your question. It depends, and I always say when we talk, you know, not all 8-4 teams or all not 9-4 teams are created equal here. This year, I guess, 7-3 teams and 8-2 teams because they played 10 games. You have to see what they do. If they finish third, they lose to Alabama by 7 points, and they, you know, they lose to LSU Auburn in a close game, and they win the games they're supposed to win convincingly, then sure, that's enough. If they don't look good doing it, if they, you know, they're non-competitive in their losses, yeah, then that's not good. But I think they are a team that is poised to take the next step. They've recruited very well. They've got a ton of guys back, and they've got Kellen Mond, a very good senior quarterback.
It will be very interesting. We're getting a little bit closer to seeing more and more games, and, of course, SEC play just around the corner. Mitch, appreciate the visit. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in this weekend. We've got NFL games right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. This week, it'll be Tom Brady and Drew Brees. Hello, Bucks and Saints. That'll be at 3 p.m. on Sunday. So a lot of good action on Sunday right here on 102.5 The Game as the NFL season, the full slate of games will begin. There'll actually be a Thursday night contest at Arrowhead, where there will be fans in the stands. I believe that's right. And it'll be the Chiefs hosting the Texans. Dun, dun, dun. So, actually,
yeah, looking forward to that.
A division game. So all Titans fans can watch and see how the Texans come out of the gate. They'll have their hands full with the Chiefs on Thursday. By the way, the Browns just gave Kareem Hunt an extension. So running backs getting a lot of love in the NFL these days.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, we're just seeing, which I guess this is normal, this, you know, after the rosters are finalized, you see some contract extensions handed out. But it's been a good year for running backs. And Kareem Hunt, you know, you speak of the Chiefs, that's where he was, got cut, had some off the field things, and did the time for that. And now with the Browns, and once he was eligible to play last year, he's able to help them out. So now he gets a contract extension and looks to be a big part of that offense.
There's no lack of weapons on the Browns. There's been no hype for the Browns at all this year compared to the past couple of years, especially last year. So I just wonder, you know, as they've been out of the spotlight, how much they're going to be able to improve on what undid them last year with the new coaching staff and everything. I just look at it as they can't be worse.
Yeah, well, they got rid of Freddie Kitchens, so that helps.
That's already a massive improvement.
But it's kind of scary to think. It's a tough division because you feel like the Steelers will be better with Roethlisberger back, and you got the Ravens there. So, and you know the Bengals, another X factor with the brand new quarterback. You feel like it's going to be a struggle, but they could be somewhat dangerous. But I look at the Browns, I'm thinking, you know, that offense could really be good if they get it going. If they can protect the quarterback and Baker Mayfield can cut down on some mistakes, he's got some weapons.
Well, it's going back to my question last week with who did we have on Friday? Oh, Trey Wingo. We had Trey Wingo on Friday, and I asked him, you know, and I think the reason I'm bringing this up is because I think the Browns fit into that category, right? We've been blown away on paper. It's a sexy roster, right? There's a lot of names you know. You know, go out and you get Jarvis Landry. And then you get Odell Beckham. And, oh, my gosh. And then you sign Kareem Hunt when he, you know, the Chiefs show him the door. So they've had these names. Of course, they draft Baker Mayfield and Nick Chubb and Myles Garrett, of course. But it's like they've been the all-name team, and so far that hasn't worked out. I remember I asked Trey Wingo, I was like, are the Bucks going to be the new all-name team where they just look fantastic on paper? They are the sexy pick? Or does it actually play out and it works? Because we've seen other teams attempt this in the past. I brought up the Redskins back in the day, back when they were the Redskins, and they went out and got Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders and all these future Hall of Famers, and it didn't work. And so you do wonder, is it just the all-name team with the Browns and the Bucks? So far, it has been. It has not played out in Cleveland anything other than it's the all-name team. It's a very recognizable roster, and that's about it. They haven't been able to put it together. And is Tampa the same thing? Because, boy, you can name the players on Tampa's roster right now, especially on offense.
Here's the biggest difference between the Bucks this year and the Browns last year when they were the all-name team, or the Super Bowl paper champions. Bruce Arians is a hell of a football coach, and Freddie Kitchens was not. So that's one big difference. And Kevin Stefanski's the head coach in Cleveland now. I know he was a good coordinator, but there's a big difference in being a coordinator and a head coach. So Freddie Kitchens totally found out. So I will look at Tampa and the experience of Brady and where he came from, and then Bruce Arians, and I'll say, okay, I think that it's more than the all-name team. Could be wrong, but I like my chances there more than I did with the Browns.
It is a fair thing to bring up, though, that in the past, when you make bold moves like that, the dream team kind of thing, remember Vince Young and the dream team for Philadelphia years ago? That flopped.
Oh, remember Gary Payton and Karl Malone to the Lakers?
Oh, yeah.
How'd that work out?
Well, they got to the finals, but they lost. In the NFL, though, it can really come crashing down sometimes when you go too far. The Jets, any number of times. The Redskins, when they were called the Redskins. The Washington football team has made big mistakes by, you know, throwing money and stockpiling. It does look like, though, that the Bucks have been smart on how they've done it. It looks really good on paper. But you can't completely completely discard the history at play there.
So let's talk about the Clowney move. It's finally over. It's finally happened. He's going to get a lot of attention toward the Titans' way. Now, this is a guy, this is one of the reasons, as you guys know, that I was all in favor of them going to get Tom Brady, because I thought the franchise could use a lot of love. Yeah, does that equate to, You know, was it just about that? No, it was about them being successful too, but they would get lots of attention. Clowney is going to bring more national recognition to this team. That's how it works. Now that he's on their roster, they will get more love nationally. More people will talk to them because Clowney is one of those identifiable names. Whatever you think about him, he still is a superstar in the league. Like, he is a name everybody knows because he was the number one pick overall. The big question is, how's it going to – what's it equate? You know, does it equate wins? If so, how many wins? We just talked about it. We laughed. Ha, ha, ha. Could you imagine if they went 9-7 again? Well, they've certainly perfected the craft of 9-7, so can they get above that? Can he push them above the 9-7 mark?
I think he does. I think it's probably the difference between me feeling good about predicting a division championship and me not feeling as good. If they rolled with what they had before they signed him, I would be thinking much more in that 9-7 range. Now with him, if they get anything from Vic Beasley, I mean anything, just, you know, five good games somewhere in there, some production, and not just a total he never was there, he's a ghost. You know, I feel like they have addressed the biggest issue that was facing them in the offseason, especially when they decided to trade Jarrell Casey. I think that was the big question. Okay, what do you have in mind there? I think we all knew what they had in mind, and now it took until Saturday to have it all come together for what they wanted. Now, how quickly can they gel him, Simmons, Daquan Jones, Harold Landry? It looks pretty good, that front now. Whereas, you know, in the past, I don't think it was anything to write home about. It was good. But can this get them to good to very good and then have
good
everything
to great?
Else?
But,
no, let's not do that again.
I'm just
no.
talking about the defensive front itself. I don't think anybody's going to sit there and go, it's the best in the league. But if it's very good and your defense becomes maybe a little better than it was last year, now you're talking.
Let me ask you something. You said, and I understand why you're saying it, but can they really afford when you just say, get anything out of it? Did they sign Vic Beasley just to say, man, fingers crossed, I'm hoping just something. $9.5 million for a guy just to do something? Don't they need more than just, whew, fingers crossed, let's go, oh, maybe something. Just give us something, anything. I don't think they signed him. I mean, it's not like they signed him 1 year, $2 million deal.
Just yeah, it's certainly not a prove-it deal.
Paid him $9.5 million.
I'm trying to temper expectations based on what we've seen. At this point, does he look like he's going to be a huge impact for him? Would
I have
it surprise
no idea
you if
what
he
he's
did absolutely
be.
Nothing? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it doesn't whether you're paying him $9 million or $2 million, he wasn't going to be the answer going in. You couldn't have filled. Now he is. I don't know. He's a guy you'd still love to get production from, but it's more of a luxury. I mean, if he didn't exist and I could do my thing with Correa and hopefully Roberson at some point, do we know when he'll be available? Just, you know, doing what they were doing last year, just mixing and matching, blitzing, being creative, you know, that got them a certain amount of the way. But now you've got a guy, as we were talking about, that you have to game plan for. He's disruptive. Whether he gets 10 sacks or 5 sacks or 12 sacks, he's a force when healthy. The thing I'm worried about most is how many games will he play? And can he stay off of the deal where he's playing? But like last year, he played through a really tough injury. To his credit, he stayed out there. Wouldn't it be pretty scary to think about how good he could be if he could avoid that kind of thing?
Well, we're going to see how big the head coach factor is with him. You know, is Vrabel going to be the difference? Can Vrabel get the best out of Clowney? Can Vrabel get the best out of Beasley? You know, that was one thing that was brought up when we talk to other people, talk to whether it's national or whatever, is they bring up the head coach and say, well, you know, he played the position, he's hands-on, he gets in there and he practices with him. You know, can he pull the best out of Vic Beasley? If all of that happens, then I believe we're having a different conversation, you know, here in a few months. We might be talking about them being the best defensive front in the league if all this comes together. But it's a huge if.
And the other part is how much better, A, is Simmons just because he is there for the whole year? And now how much better does Clowney playing next to him or near him make him? I mean, I think Daquan Jones is already a pretty darn good player, right? I think he's the perfect guy that becomes better because of a guy like Clowney. But now Jeffrey Simmons could be that kind of guy himself. So you might have, in a perfect world, you got two disruptive forces there that are making everybody else in that front more effective.
The defensive line coach, Terrell Williams, spoke today. He was asked about Jeffrey Simmons' identity as he's trending as a football player. He laughed and he said, quote, "He's trending towards violence. He's going to be a violent football player," end quote.
Who was he talking about?
Jeffrey Simmons.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, but you read that and you go, okay, that's what you want. That's what you want on that defensive front. You part ways with Jarrell Casey. Now you've made up the money with Clowney. You want Clowney to be productive, but you also want Jeffrey Simmons to fill that void on that defensive line left by Casey. Again, I keep using the word if, but if all that comes together, and it's a huge if, you're going to feel really good about this defense. You just are, but you got to see it first. And how long is it going to take to gel? Can Vrabel's approach and his coaching staff, can they bring this together sooner rather than later? I just don't know. I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, I wonder if their defense is going to have, like, how different of a look is it going to be? I mean, I don't know. We're going to find out. But I kind of go back to the earlier conversation. I just don't think this team can get off to the slow start again. I know they've done it and they've turned it around in the past, but it's just like the kicking game. You don't want to – yeah, you avoided that last year. Like, it didn't bite you. But, you know, and I know they've addressed that now, at least we think. But you can't do that. You can't keep getting off to slow starts and then hoping for the, okay, now let's kick it in gear mode, you know? Like, in the NFL, that if you're playing that game, that game's probably going to burn you more than it's actually going to play out. It played out last year. I think they need a good start. I mean, I think, okay, the first four games at Denver – Jacksonville here, at Minnesota, Pittsburgh here. What's realistic? What do you see that being? First four games.
The easy answer, and it's based on what they have done the last few years, is 2-2. But I don't think that doesn't need to be the answer. I don't think. I know it doesn't need to be the answer. They need to come out of Denver with a win.
I think so too.
Because they're not good there historically. You need to shake that. It's the first game of the season. There's all this hype on this team after going to the AFC Championship game. And we all look at that game in Denver as that's when everything changed, because that's when they made the quarterback change. And that was kind of, all right, it's the new Titans, because they come out the next week and they win, and we saw what they did after that. So start that now by getting that win. Jacksonville, as you said earlier, I agree with you. I believe that's going to be a win. Minnesota won't be easy, but it got easier because no fans. And then Pittsburgh, I don't know what Big Ben's going to be.
I know.
If Big Ben's healthy, then that's going to be a tough football game. If he's not, then I feel pretty good about beating Josh Dobbs.
But I mean, you're right. Sitting here today, it seems like a total coin toss game because we don't know what Pittsburgh is going to look like. Yeah, it won't be Dobbs.
Yeah, but even Kyle Rudolph, you know, I feel good about that. But yeah, we don't know.
Mason Rudolph,
Kyle Rudolph, whatever, whichever Rudolph it is.
If they've got a tight end playing if they've got a tight end playing quarterback, I'm going to go with the Titans on that one.
Willie said Patrick Lindsay earlier. Philip Lindsay, who cares? You know, is one of them.
Who's Patrick Lindsay?
I have no idea.
I wish you guys would have drafted Patrick Lindsay on Sunday.
What is the line? I'm looking at ESPN. It doesn't list the line. It has the lines for a lot of games. What's the line on the Titans?
Isn't
it like close to a pick 'em or one or two?
Yeah, I saw after the Clowney signing became official, some books had it as a pick 'em.
So there you go. Like, isn't that such the dilemma is we're all sitting here going, well, I think they're better than the Broncos. They need to win that game. It's a pick 'em.
Let's see. Let's see if I can get them very quickly.
If it's not, it's a point.
KC's favored by 9.5 on Thursday night. Wow. I'd probably take the Texans and the points. I'm just saying. We're going to have pick 6 on Friday.
Can't wait for that.
I got it. Ooh. Yeah, it's pick 'em, but there's a couple of books out there that have Denver as a 1.5-point favorite, but the majority of them have it as a pick 'em.
Yeah, you're right.
There's two books that have
FanDuel has.
Oh, wait a minute, it's FanDuel and.
And it opened as a 1.5.
That's right. Okay, so that's a good point. Yeah, opened as 1.5 favorite for Denver. FanDuel still has Denver as a 1.5-point favorite. Everybody else has got the game as a pick 'em.
Well, Circa Sports has the Titans as a 1-point favorite. If we're looking at the same place, which I think we are.
You know, all that being said, I think your record after 4 games, you could be 2-2, but still feel pretty good about where things are going. As you pointed out, Chase, you kind of alluded to it. The last 2 years, they were 2-2 after 4, even though they had some disasters in there. You know, where you're thinking, whoa, that's how are they? How in the world are they 2-2? Or you're going, boy, they should have been better than 2-2. There's a lot of ways a 2-2 can go. And then what happens after that?
I mean, if they.
But I don't know if I would go as compartmentalized with my outlook. I just think this is a team that should win double digits, whether they end up 2-2, 3-1, or even 1-3. They could still get to 10.
Because if we're sitting here a week from today and let's just say we're talking about a loss, okay, what does that loss look like? The conversation is completely different if it was a close game, it was tied, McManus hits a last-second field goal, and Denver wins. Or Gostkowski misses a field goal and Denver wins by a field goal. I mean, that changes the conversation. There's just so many different factors in what it could look like, but – and it doesn't, you know, I say they need to come out of there with a win. It doesn't have to be a blowout win. It doesn't have to be, oh, yeah, they go in and absolutely dominate. Just go in there and figure out how to come away with the win. That's all I'm asking in week one, because there's so many unknowns because they haven't played.
It's a pretty tough schedule when you get down to it. I think it could be very tough. Depends on some things. But this is how we sit and look at it today. That your strength of schedule can look really tough going into a season, and then in the middle of the year going, wow, what an easy schedule. It can completely switch one way or the other.
Come back and make our conference predictions in the NHL. We haven't put that on record yet. I know game ones have been played. But we will have our predictions on the other side to close out the show. And also there's a little bit of news on the Predator side, so we'll do that. But first, I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. I've been talking to you about them for years because I've been going there for years. And they have helped a lot of you here in Middle Tennessee improve your quality of life. And who doesn't want that as we all get older? And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge over there, the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to help you. And they've got a lot of things they do under one roof. Hormone replacement therapy. Maybe you've been feeling off lately. You don't have any energy. You don't have any pep in your step, and you're wondering what the heck is going on. Go over there and talk to them about that. They can get you going in the right direction. Maybe your levels are really, really low, and that tends to happen as we age. Face and body rejuvenation. Weight loss management is something else that they do over there. They've got programs and people that can help you get going in the right direction, because the last 6 months have been hard, right? Maybe your gym has been closed for a lot of the time and you just got out of that schedule, that routine, and you just never got back on when the gym reopened. Get it. And maybe you're not happy with the way you look right now. You need to be healthy right now. That's something you can talk about. If you need to see everything they do under one roof, their website is CoolSpringsMD.com. If you need to schedule a consultation or make an appointment, the number is 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. right, we know the conference finals are set in the NHL. Just to quickly recap the last round, round two. I had Colorado, that's a loser. I had Vegas, that's a winner. Tampa, winner. Philadelphia, loser. Went 2-2. Willie had Dallas, winner. Vancouver, loser. Tampa, winner. Islanders, winner. Went 3-1. Chase also went 3-1, hitting with Vegas, Tampa, and the Islanders. He lost with Colorado. And just quickly, let's see, Willie's 9-3 is 12. Very good record.
I've done very well since the playoffs, since the first round started. I did not do well in the qualifying round at all.
Uh-oh. Okay. 4-2. Wow, looking good for Chase. Wow. Okay. I am 9-11. So that's just poop. Just absolutely.
Got to get you over 500 here.
You are 12-8. I'm running out of games. I'm running out of series to get over 500. Willie is 12-8. Chase is poultry 14-6.
Okay.
Ooh. Nice work, good. Chase. Nice
it's been
work.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
14-6. He went the qualifying rounds. Went 5-3, 6-2, and 3-1.
All right.
There you go. All right. So let's do our conference finals. What's everybody got?
In fact,
you want me to go first so you guys can pick the opposite, just so you know what the winning side is to be on.
I'm pretty clear cut in my picks, and you know, unfortunately, we're doing this after a game has been played. But I am going to go with Vegas, even though they lost the first game against Dallas. I will take them in the series, and I will take Tampa, even though I am rooting big time for the Islanders. But I just think Tampa too many horses. I think they're in the groove. I think the Islanders might show a little sign of not being quite as sharp there. I would expect the series to go pretty deep, but I like Tampa. So I was really intrigued that Vegas went with Fleury in the first game. It's so odd how they're doing the goalies, but there you have it.
Chase?
Well, since the 2020 Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche are no longer in it.
They gone.
I'm with Willie. I stick with Vegas. Vegas was my pick. Even though they're down 1-0, that was obviously a close game, so I'm sticking with the Golden Knights. And yes, even after last night's throttling, however you want to put it, maybe I'm picking with my heart, but I'm going with Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders.
Okay.
They will find a way.
I am going to go completely opposite of what you just put out there, Chase, which is a very good sign for you. I think this just feels like the magical run. We've seen the magical run before, i.e. 2017 here, i.e. see St. Louis last year. And I think we're seeing the magical run right now with the Dallas Stars. They're playing their best hockey. They've put it together. They finished on a really sour note to end the regular season. They weren't good in the tune-up games, the exhibition games, or they're just the seeding games. And since then, they've looked really good. I just think they're hot, and I think they're going to ride this wave all the way to the final. So I'm going to go Dallas, and it pains me, but I'm going to go Tampa. I just think Tampa, we've talked about it. I just think what happens. I'll tell you what they are. They're the Virginia Cavaliers of college basketball. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you understand that reference?
Not really.
Okay, well, you said yes. Well, what does that mean?
Lost in the first round, win it the next year.
They were the number one seed, lost in the first round, the first ever number one seed to lose to a 16. And then the next year, and they got crushed for that. They had a great year. Everybody was predicting them to win the whole thing. They lost in the first round to a 16 seed. And what did they do the next year? Came back and won.
Cut the Nets.
They won it.
Yeah.
Ryan just sent me a text that says, you are definitely picking with your heart. The Islanders are not beating the Lightning, LOL. I don't think anybody is.
So I'm going with the Lightning and the Stars. I think Tampa, this is the year. And I'm going to pick – I'll just tell you right now, I'll do like what you do with Colorado. Tampa's going to win it.
So you were saying the 2020 Stanley Cup champions will be the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yep.
Okay.
And no, it's not off the 8-2 game. That's not where that's based off of.
As
I'm
long
just
as
telling
we don't
you,
have to hear that Dallas Stars goal song.
It's the Virginia of college basketball. They got embarrassed last year. They were the President's Trophy winning team. Everybody was predicting them to win it last year, and they got swept the first round. And this year they'll come back and win it all. Revenge. It is closing time. That'll do it for us. There you go. By the way, we'll make our NFL predictions on Thursday's show leading into the NFL season that night. We'll predict who's going to get in, division winners, all that good stuff on Thursday's show. That will do it for us. Have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.